when a dad has to leave early for soccer practice, when a dad has pictures of his kids on his desk, there is a feeling of, wow, that guy, of course you have to leave early. What a great dad. And women don't have that benevolence associated with them taking time off for their kids.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
So women have made strides in the workplace over the last few decades, but there's still plenty of progress yet to be made. In particular, women are very underrepresented within executive leadership levels of many organizations. Is that going to change in our lifetime? What progress are we making at championing gender diversity and allowing women to get ahead? To answer that question, I turn to Lindsay Kaplan, who's been a leader in the marketing and communications field for some time now. She first came to my attention when she joined Casper's founding team to lead communications and brand engagement for them. And in 2019, she co-founded Chief, the private network dedicated to connecting and supporting women in executive leadership. Lindsay, welcome to Future Proof.
Hi, I'm so happy to chat with you about this today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously to get into the weirdness of, you know, not doing things like this face to face, which I know we'll have to jump into in a bit, but who are you in your own words and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So I'm co-founder of Chief, an organization that was founded in 2019. Our goal is to unite and support rising women leaders in business. And so my co-founder and I created Chief from a very personal place, knowing that as we were VPs, as we were getting high up in our careers, we felt like the stakes were higher, our decisions were becoming more important, and yet we had less support. And at that point in our careers, the mentorship that you experience as a younger woman starts to dry up and you become the de facto mentor to others. And so we really wanted to create a community of powerful women that could support one another, co-mentor, and really try to smash that glass ceiling once and for all.
And yeah, this is one thing that I try to always be kind of down the middle, but at the same time, this is a thing that I feel very strongly about. So it's very difficult for me to just be totally objective. But given that, I just want to say, what is Chief's mission ultimately, like you just kind of talked about? But, you know, if you could go into it a little bit further, how you go about bringing that to life and why does it matter? You know, like, why is this something that affects so many people? And why is it, you know, bad for our economy, essentially, if you don't represent people properly at all levels?
Right. Well, at status quo right now, it's going to take 200 years for women to get to parity with men in business. And I don't want to wait that long. I don't have 200 years left. And I think there have been a lot of changes made over the last few decades, and none of them feel like they're really truly making a big enough dent for me. And so our goal at Chief is to time travel, is to figure out how we collectively can come together to cross-pollinate power. And what I mean by that is really connect women across industries, across roles, to make sure that women are in all of the places that decisions are being made. And I'm quoting the great Ruth Bader Ginsburg as I say that. So that is truly our goal. It's not just for women, but it's to really increase diversity in the boardroom, in the White House eventually, and in any place that there is power, there should be great and equal representation to make sure that there is diversity in these places.
And, you know, obviously there have been these male-focused professional communities for, I was going to say decades, but it's really more like
forever.
Millennia.
Yeah. Cavemen. We never talk about the cave ladies. Think about it.
But what's interesting to me is, you know, like, ironically, those are falling away at the same time as we have women-only networks developing. And obviously, we have networks to some extent aimed at specific, you know, ethnicities, right? So, like, just to play devil's advocate for a second, is there any danger in that? Like, do you worry that there are kind of those cavemen, essentially, who are going to feel, well, it's divisive to create a network that's for women only? And again, this is devil's advocate only.
I always appreciate the devil. So we are not only for women. We are not flipping what the boys' club is and saying we want to be the same thing, so no boys allowed. It's not what Chief is here for. I think a lot about office furniture. I think about the office chairs that are in every office across the world. They are made and designed for a a medium-sized man. They are not made for women, but we sit in them. I sit in it. I sit in an office chair every day. And so as we created Chief, we really wanted to make something that was designed for women, designed to make sure that people who are underrepresented can come together, and yet we welcome everybody. So men are absolutely invited to apply, so long as you meet our qualifications, that you are a leader, that you are aligned with change at the top, and you support our mission. So men are allowed to attend our events. They are absolutely allowed in our clubhouses. And we have a ton of male allies supporting the mission of Chief.
And I know that you've had some really good success stories coming out of Chief, obviously, that have just validated the type of work that you're doing. You know, so what are some of the success stories that you've just observed by seeing, you know, women connect with people who they might not have otherwise been able to meet with and to be mentored by?
Yeah, so I think I have countless stories of members getting promotions, of members becoming presidents and CEOs of companies. And that is incredible to see. So I have a lot of those stories, but I also have stories of women who are going through a terrible 2020, right? It is impossible to know how to navigate these unforeseen, ridiculous situations that we are finding ourselves in as business leaders, that are getting through them, that are finding support, that are going through layoffs, that are, you know, just experiencing things as managers, as leaders that we at one point would view as a worst case scenario. And these women are getting through it together. And so with supporting one another in our peer groups, from having our speakers come in and walk through things like crisis comms and, you know, implementing DEI in action, all of these important elements, when I see our members succeed and I see them leading and not cowering, that to me is success.
That's great. I, at the same time, I think what's interesting is there's quite a bit of in-person interaction when we think of networking and development traditionally. And I'm wondering, did you have to pivot and adapt at all as an organization as a result of, you know, COVID and the horror that is 2020?
Yeah, the trash fire of 2020. We did. We have always said that we are a community that happens to have space. We're not a co-working space. The clubhouse that we opened in New York City, if you were to come by on a random Tuesday pre-pandemic, you'd see a handful of members there having a coffee, taking a meeting, maybe one or two working on their laptops. But it's not a co-working space. Our members are busy. They have offices. They don't need another space. What we really wanted was a place for, during our peer group meetings, after events, for people to rub shoulders and to create those natural serendipitous connections that people make when they're networking. And so in the event that we are now paused in our clubhouses, although we are opening, quick plug, New York, Chicago, LA for social distanced usage. In the absence of that, we've really leaned into our digital product. So we have, first of all, absolutely mastered the art of Zoom and the Zoom breakout room. So we've had amazing success hosting networking events, getting people to meet one another, creating small groups, really igniting dialogue around important topics right now that are allowing people to connect in an organic way. It's absolutely different than meeting them face to face, but I think we're all used to the Zoom connection right now, and we found a lot of benefit there. The second thing we've done is launch our member app. So we have app, website, this amazing, robust community platform that has industry groups, role-specific groups, identity groups, where people are connecting and meeting and sharing dialogue. And the third thing we are doing is, by the time this podcast comes out, we're launching a product for members that allows, through our curation algorithm, we are introducing members to one another on the app. So if I sign on every Monday, there's a drop with three new members that our algorithm believes that our members will want to meet. So we are creating these connections through all of these different ways. And we're finding that, you know, in 2020, people need networking. So we just had to really rethink what we're doing, get creative, and find different ways to make sure we're connecting our members and uniting them regardless of where they are and regardless of the fact that our clubhouses are not at full capacity.
And has COVID hit professional, you know, women in executive leadership on average differently than it has men? I'm not sure if there's, you know, some kind of data out there. I know I've heard anecdotes.
Yeah, there is data that shows that women are stepping back. And so this pandemic has disproportionately affected women and moms. And I say women, not just moms, because women are often caretakers of their parents, of people around them. And so it is absolutely hitting women in the workforce. And I think this is going to be detrimental for years to come to see how people are pausing their jobs. They're taking time off. They're leaning out of their day-to-day job. And I say this as a mom of two, it is absolutely impossible for me to be at the capacity I was at pre-pandemic. It's impossible. So it's tough on women. We know that they are disproportionately taking on more childcare, more housework. And so we as a society have to support and make sure that we are not discounting moms. We are not discounting anybody, any parent in the workplace that has to lean out a little bit to make sure that they're supporting their family through this ridiculous trash fire of the year.
Yeah, it's actually interesting just because my wife works and my work earlier in this year was a lot more flexible than hers. So there was a time where we fled New York and I was fully in charge of the kids basically for about an entire month and then just got little increments of work done when I could. And then I realized this is the position that a lot of women often find themselves in, where they're the person who takes the brunt of it, essentially, whenever anything happens in a family, but they're still, you know, they still have their professional obligations and they find a way to get it done. And not saying all women, but I think in general, there's a lot of just kind of toughness and grit that goes along with it and not complaining when you have to do more than your fair share.
Listen, I think there is more exception, and there is data that supports this, that when a man and women get to an equivalent high up place in their career, when a dad has to leave early for soccer practice, when a dad has pictures of his kids on his desk, there is a feeling of, wow, that guy, of course you have to leave early. What a great dad. And women don't have that benevolence associated with them taking time off for their kids, right? We're actually punished as, oh, she's not working hard enough. Oh, her job is second to her kids. And so we really have to step back and check our bias, the way we think about moms and dads. I always joke with my team, I never try to be a great mom. I try to be the world's best dad. And it usually gets a laugh, but there is a completely different set of expectations that we have as Americans around what a mom and a working mom is versus a working dad. And so we have to hold men and women to a similar standard as they parent and cut them both a similar amount of slack right now.
Have you seen the video for Taylor Swift's The Man?
I haven't.
Okay. I'm going to throw it in the show notes because you basically just described, you know, the juxtaposition of how a man can act versus how a woman can and the double standard we have. But anyway, I'm going to leave this in the episode because why not? But do you think that from your observations, is the workday itself going to change as a result of COVID? You know, even after we get through this, will work policies naturally have evolved in some fashion, like the ability of allowing people to work from home, for instance? Or the workday kind of having elongated to allow for people to do certain things for their family? I'm guessing those could be two potential long-term ramifications.
I think it really depends on the company. We look at the progressive startups and you look at Twitter, you look at Google. Those companies historically have had greater rights and greater, I should say, benefits, not rights, for their employees and for their parents. And so I know those companies will set a great bar and ensure that there is more flexibility, more remote work, longer hours. We know that we've seen that. But I look at the more traditional corporations, I look at small businesses, medium-sized businesses, and I'm not sure. I think that there is a population that wants to get back to business as usual. And I think that there is a tendency for bosses to want to really understand what their employees are doing all day. So I'm hopeful that the progressive companies will take the lead and others will follow. But there are some old school bosses out there that I think cannot wait to get back to the way things were.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true. I mean, if you don't mind my asking on a personal and professional level, how is as a working woman slash mom slash world's greatest dad, how has, you know, COVID affected you in the way in which you work and what you've kind of had to deal with as a co-founder?
It's affected me terribly. I am a complete mess. I am incredibly thankful for my co-founder, for my team. We have parents at Chief. We're all trying to support one another. My team, the people that don't have kids at home right now are stepping up, but it's miserable. It's terrible. I have a 9-month-old that needs to be held all the time. I have a 5-year-old starting kindergarten, which is remote kindergarten is a joke. And I think this is just being a parent in general, being a working mom is tough. There's been a million things written about how, you know, impossible it is to, quote, have it all and to juggle this. So if it was hard before, we've reached peak burnout. And the number one thing I hope other people take away from this is just the ability to be honest and say, I'm failing at everything and it's going to be okay. My kids will be okay. I have enough people in my company that are supporting all of the work. My co-founder is incredible. And I just need to raise my hand and be honest that things are shitty.
And I think that, not to overgeneralize, but I think that that's something that I've observed with women that I've covered, but also worked with, is that there's a little bit more of a sense of vulnerability and honesty is okay. And the world will not end if you're able to kind of acknowledge that things suck a little bit. And in some ways, it's helpful to everybody else because it lets other people know that we're all struggling on some level or another right now, or most of us are.
Listen, I think there are a lot of people that aren't struggling. I think my husband and I joke, man, if we didn't have kids right now and we could be traveling, we were maybe younger, so we felt a little bit less vulnerable to COVID-19 and the effects. I think there are people out there that are really enjoying elements of the pandemic. Elements. So not all of it. I think there are people that are traveling and exercising and practicing self-care. I am not one of them. I think if you can find beauty in 2020, good for you. And I hope you embrace it.
Well said. So I wanted to ask you, what trends do you expect to see over the next few years with respect to professional networks like Chief? I mean, obviously, we talked a little bit about, you know, what you're doing in terms of developing your network. Do you think that there are going to be more virtual components, you know, to networking and mentorship? And, you know, is there anything else that maybe we're missing in terms of trends that people might see with professional networks and professional development?
I think on the development side, 2020 is going to really impact the way that we are working with leaders, the way we think about what it means to be a leader. There's so much around presence in the office and so much about in-person meetings that as we think through what does it mean to be a leader, there's always now going to be this element of crisis. We have been in a state of this, you know, rip-roaring economy with the stock market at an all-time high. And in 2020, we're dealing with, you know, natural disasters. We're dealing with an election year like none other. We are dealing with the type of disasters that we used to see once every few years, once a decade. And so there's going to be much more about crisis and managing through unstable periods and moments than ever before.
Yeah, I think obviously crisis comes, experience certainly comes in handy in a year like this. So I think also we're recording this, I guess, what is it, like 6 days after Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. And I know you mentioned her previously, so I feel like we would be remiss not discussing her in some way. I mean, what did you admire about her? If anything, I feel like maybe there are a few things there. And as a woman who champions other women, do you have any concerns about kind of what's to come next? It's kind of a little crazy when we think about one 87-year-old woman passing away and then thinking, oh, yeah, that'll have ramifications for a country of 330 million. But, you know, any thoughts on that front?
Yeah, I think a lot about the statement she made around, and I'm going to butcher this, but I'm paraphrasing. Somebody asked her how many women should be on the Supreme Court, and she said 9. And the shock that she always received from that answer, and the shock knowing that the status quo for us in America, the blindness we have to an all-white male room is the normal. It is normal in our head to see one of those corporate websites where we get to the about page and we see that there are 9 white guys, 5 white guys, 10 men, 1 token woman. That's what we're used to the point where it's shocking and it feels weird to see an all-woman team. And I think to honor Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we need to start thinking about how we flip that script, how we stop approaching business as usual, and how the shocking and the idea of women leading, of people who are underrepresented, of people of color leading, should not be tokenized. It should become a new normal as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I heard that also recently, and it struck me as kind of, wouldn't it be great if we just had a world where nothing kind of stood out to us because we had total confidence that our systems were working and that the best people on average were becoming CEOs rather than, let's say, the best people on average who are male and often white male become CEOs, but also there will be some other people in there, but it's just not even. And I think that anybody who has a high degree of confidence in themselves should want a level playing field, because if there's a level playing field and you come out on top, then you know without doubt that you deserve to be there, as opposed to the world that we have right now, where, you know, if you don't make it, you're not sure if you didn't make it for the right reasons. And if you're at the top, you're not sure if you're there for the right reasons.
You know, I think I will be satisfied that we've hit equality when I not only see equal representation in the room, but I see mediocre, not great women leaders. Because there's so many mediocre, meh leaders out there. And for women to get to the top, they have to be brilliant. They have to be amazing. The bar is so high. Bring me the B students. We can get just meh people to be leading companies that are women. That is how I know we have hit the place where I'm satisfied and we can pack up shop at Chief.
I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Lindsay. I think this is really informative.
It was great chatting with you.
Thanks again to Lindsay for making the time. I think that probably a lot of you guys might be already supportive of what they're doing over at Chief, but I think just hearing it from somebody who's led an organization like that, it really kind of makes you think and makes you realize that we've got a lot more work to go in that regard. If you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Quartuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.